Hello, everyone. Saddle. Welcome to another edition of ARG Presents. I am Professor Aaron, joined by a man who skipped a few more classes than he needed to. I give you Vice Principal Brent.
I've always liked being a Vincible.
It's Principal.
Oh.
Principal. I said it cool guy style.
Oh, you're blowing what that was.
You're blowing it. You're blowing it. So, if you joined us last week, we spun the wheel.
Yes.
We made the stupid deal.
No.
A category that literally was pulled from the ether by this man right here, Brent. Tell him the name of this category in your inimitable style.
Well, here's something that people need to understand. There is a difference between edutainment and educainment.
Mm-hmm.
See, in edutainment, you learn while you enjoy yourselves playing a different game or an adventure or some kind of experience. In educainment, ignorance is met with force, usually from a cane or other blunt object.
Wow. So much lower on the entertainment, much higher on the pain.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, there you go. That sums this show up.
Yeah,
right there.
That's pretty much it.
Low on entertainment value, high on pain. Yeah. So, Brittany, I mean, you realize you're an idiot, though. You just basically misspoke, and that's how this category came to be.
Me misspoke? That's impossible.
Exactly. Thank you, Ralph. So, before we dive into the two games we picked from the vast library of
edutainment
titles, I thought we would sort of take a look at some of the other edutainment titles, the big hitters throughout the old days of computing. I just jotted down a list of a few of them here. I thought it's funny, a lot of these I've not played. And sort of, I bet you've played a lot more of these than me, so I thought we'd test your
mettle.
Well,
I mean,
here.
When you were coming up through school, the computer was just banging some rocks together.
You know, well, you know, it's funny, the very first computer I ever had or ever saw was a TRS-80 Model 1 or 3 at my middle school. And we were all like, oh, computer, you know. And then that's when I was like, Dad was like, yeah, it's computer time. So, yeah, we got one. It was soon after. So, that was kind of cool. So, let's have a look at some of these titles here. I'm just going to go through a few here.
All right.
Okay. So, right out of the gate, this is a pretty popular title. It's funny. For years, I didn't know this was edutainment. I just thought it was some kind of crazy game. And that's the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego series.
Oh, that's super edutainment.
Now,
it super punishes you for getting the wrong answer.
Have you played any of these?
Oh, yeah.
I've never played a single one. I tried playing one time, and I was like, yeah, screw this.
Yeah, it's all geography crap.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's a geography thing?
Yeah, and it teaches you about the locations that you go to.
How did this game spawn all these sequels, cartoons, all this crap? Is it that good?
No. I'm not big on it. Uh-huh. But it is entertaining, and compared to some of the other edutainment games out there, it's well above and beyond in like production value and fun, and it's not just you do the same thing over and over and over. It has kind of an evolving story, and it's not the same every time when you play it. So it's a fun game.
Did you think about picking that one, by the way?
No,
not me either.
No.
Okay, what about this one? This is from our good buddies at Nintendo. Mario Teaches Typing. You ever go around with that one?
I've seen it and loaded it up, but I don't think I've ever. I certainly haven't spent any time with it in an actual in a school or anything like that. Educational sense.
Okay, what about this game? This kept popping up as an award-winning game, Reader Rabbit, and apparently there was Writer Rabbit as well.
I know Reader Rabbit is a popular series because they did a math one as well later down the line. But no, that was not one.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Played.
Math Rabbit.
Yeah,
they really didn't extend themselves on the naming procedure of these things. Hey, if anyone in the live chat has played any of this stuff, feel free to shout out. Now here's one that we've played. We've talked about it on here. I don't think we ever covered this. We've talked about it a lot. It's sort of become huge again for some weird reason. Like you hear everybody talk about it, and that's the old Oregon Trail.
Well, it's become huge again because it's something that people played in their youth, and now they're old enough to say, hey, I want that again. I remember enjoying that as part of my school day.
Well, you know, again, that's a game I played a ton of. It is fun. Yeah. But the fact that this thing is some kind of cultural event now, I find bizarre.
You're right.
I mean, what you said was dead on.
Back in the school days, this was going out on an adventure. Having random elements in something that you could play at school was mind-boggling. And there was also different strategies to try. Yeah. Plus, you could hunt buffalo to extinction. So, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Now, this one, I'm not going to lie, I've never heard of this one. I think this was a later release, or maybe it's called Splunks and the Caves of Mr. Pseudo.
Yeah,
never heard of this one. Nope. I hadn't either. But apparently, I saw it on two or three of these lists. It's about exploring. I don't know what exactly you're exploring to do, but so if anybody's ever heard of that
one. I wonder if it's like a Blue's Clues type of, or Dora the Explorer type game.
Did you watch either one of those shows back in the day?
No, that I was way too old for either of those. But I appreciate what they've done.
I watched them because, the kid.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I didn't like them that much. Okay, here's
I don't think you were their target audience.
Well, they blew it, though. Hey, listen, if you want everyone to watch. So here's what I have heard of. This one's been around since the dawn of time, Brinster. Lemonade Stand.
Yes, yeah. Obviously a classic. Set up your lemonade stand, try to make money by buying supplies and balancing your supplies versus your demand due to the weather and if it's going to rain or not. So, yeah, very classic game, very good game. I think that is something that really, you don't really even think of it as an edutainment game until you boil it down to its core roots. Because you just play it, you're a little businessman, it's fun. So,
That's been around forever.
Yeah.
It's been forever. Here, I've never heard of this one either, Brent. Maybe you have Odell Lake. Does that ring a bell?
No.
You have to escape water while not getting captured by fish, something. It's a math game, I believe. Or no, it's a decision game. Never heard of it. It made a lot of lists, so I'll throw it on here. Here's another one that I knew about but never played. Mixed Up Mother Goose. A very... it's just a game. You know, you ever played this one? Mixed Up Mother Goose?
No, it's another one that... because, unfortunately, when I was coming up through school, we didn't have a lot of computer time. We had a home economics class, which those are way dead now. But we had a home economics class where, usually once a week, or we had different groups that would rotate either to do cooking or cleaning or sewing or computer time.
Yeah.
And so when you rotated to computer time, almost everyone played Oregon Trail for as long as possible. And then that's really the only edutainment game we had in school outside of some of the other ones, like math and reading type ones.
Yeah.
But some of these other funky ones didn't have access to.
Do you put games like, and we should talk about this as we talked about it last week when we were debating on what to play. We both have sort of different ideas as to what edutainment title is. What do you think is the difference between, say, like an Oregon Trail versus, say, like, what was the one you were dying to play that I've ixnayed?
I wanted to play Scribblenauts.
Right.
And I feel that Scribblenauts is an edutainment game that is focused on language, on problem solving, on creativity. And when you said that, no, that doesn't count as an edutainment, I was stunned. And I think if we had a poll below this video or in chat, that Scribblenauts would indeed be considered an edutainment game by many.
No, ain't nobody is considering that.
Because
sound off in chat right now.
If it's not, what is it?
It's just a game. You know, like, let me ask you: is a game like SimCity, is that educational? And let's keep going down that road. What about something like Civilization? That's what I saw mentioned a lot.
No, Civilization is not.
Yeah, but I saw that mentioned a lot, but it really it's not historically accurate, clearly, because you're doing things that didn't happen in history.
Right. Well, even beyond that, it's far too deep, and it doesn't have a focus.
What about something like Sim Life or Sim or
no? No, that stuff definitely.
So you're not buying any of that.
Sim City. I mean, I could at least understand it. Unfortunately, I think that for SimCity, where it doesn't have proper representation of some elements of city building, it's kind of a gray area. But I could definitely see some. If
and
someone
also Godzilla.
Said,
also,
well, but that kind of stuff is you can turn off or not even have. I feel that SimCity. If someone said SimCity is an edutainment game, I'd be like, okay, I'll buy it.
I'm not buying it. Does Chad have anything to say about our any voting or anything? What real is?
Oh, they fell asleep. They fell asleep 20 minutes ago.
I knew it. So we delved into the. I have to say, I did swim around in this topic for a while before I made my choice.
I did as well.
It's funny. As we record this, we have just completed the week of Christmas.
Yeah,
2019, and yet I still found. In fact, when my buddy stopped by to see me last night, they had caught me at the tail end of a 2-hour session of playing my game, and they were like, "What are you playing?" And I was like, "Well, I guess I'll tell you."
Now, something before we get started. I looked at, I really wanted to play something on the Commodore this week.
Okay.
So I did a search for Commodore education games, right?
Yeah.
And there's a Commodore education group that made dozens of education games for the Commodore.
Yeah.
But it was all just text or really, really bad ANSI art. But it covered everything, and they were all separate programs. I think my favorite one that I found and I was able to play was called Yellow Light, and the whole premise of the game is when you come up to an intersection and the light turns yellow, when should you hit the gas or when should you hit the brake? And it was just,
there are plenty of people that right now need that class.
It was just, you know, Asterix driving around in a line course, but it was so interesting because I never thought that would make it into the realm of edutainment, and here we are.
There you go. How bizarre. You know, we might as well just jump in since you were talking about what you played. Clearly, I'm assuming you did not play this game on the C64. So, Brent,
no.
Tell us what game you chose to kick us off this week.
I decided to go with something that was an absolute classic in the Munchers series, and particularly Number Munchers.
I have never played this game, I'll be honest with you. I never heard of it. If it's famous, it's not famous to me.
It is. It's very famous. this is, before I talk about the game, I want to talk about the people who made it, because they have an interesting story.
All right.
MECC, the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, was who made this.
A consortium, no less.
They,
I always wonder what that stood for.
They actually changed their name later to be company. But, or corporation, I'm
consortium's
sorry.
Consortium's better.
It is.
Yeah.
These are the people that made all the Muncher games, which there's math and spelling and tons of them. And they also are behind Oregon Trail.
Okay.
But they didn't start out as a edutainment producing company. They started out controlling and maintaining the computer systems of the Minnesota school system. And they started filling needs. Usually it was, hey, we need a spreadsheet program, or hey, we need a little chat program to talk back and forth in private. And they would make those things. And eventually someone was like, hey, you know, I kind of need something to keep my little brats entertained. Can you
surely they didn't say that.
Can you whip something up? And they went on to make Oregon Trail, the Yukon Trail, the Amazon Trail. They love their trails.
Oh, I didn't know about those.
Number Munchers, Word Munchers, Fraction Munchers, Super Munchers, Lemonade Stand, Storybook Weaver, Museum Storybook Madness, Weaver. Dino Park Tycoon. They made all these games, and it was kind of strange, their evolution, because the school system couldn't support them. They made all their games on Apple II, mostly. And other schools around the country and eventually around the world were licensing these games, and they were making a ton of money. And they finally said, you know what? The Apple scene's kind of dying off here for the school systems. We need to expand into DOS. And Minnesota was like, no. We can't afford that.
Yeah.
Because they predicted it was going to cost right around $5 million. You know, this was to expand into IBM stuff.
Okay.
So they said, well, screw you. We're going to go make our own company. Yeah. And that's exactly what they did. And they continued to make software as a private company up until 1991.
The same name? I mean,
yeah, except that's when they changed to corporation. In 94, they actually became a publicly traded company with about $30 million in annual revenue.
Yeah.
And then in 95, they were bought by SoftKey for $70 million. I'm sorry, $370 million.
Holy moly!
So this company, who started off just supporting this cool system, made games that people love and remember and cherish now, spun off into their own company, and then it was publicly traded and then sold.
Yeah, that was probably a pretty good buy because, I mean, just I think it was last Christmas, I picked up the Oregon Trail handheld game and the Oregon Trail card game. You know, and so they were licensing the crap out of this stuff and t-shirts and stuff. They probably made their money back from purchasing that company just on licensing their merch.
Well, it's an odd tale of, you know, look where they came from and look what Minnesota could have had if they would have, you know, supported the idea a little bit more.
Hey, they still have the biggest ball of twine.
That's true.
I don't know what that's worth, but they got that going for them.
So let's pull it back and just look at one of their ventures. And the Muncher series is basically the same game where you're learning different stuff, the same basics for all of them. So we're going to focus on Number Munchers, which is probably their most famous. It's where the formula works the best. In Number Munchers, you are a muncher, and you have a grid of boxes on the screen. And at the top of the screen, you will have an objective. Either it might be find the prime numbers, find all the answers that are less than six.
Multiplication stuff, you know, multiples.
Fractions, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And you have to go around the grid and eat the numbers that correspond with whatever the question at the top is saying.
Yeah.
And when you eat all the right answers, the screen will blink and you'll go into the next level. And every three levels, you actually get a little cutscene, which it made this different than a lot of edutainment games where they just wanted to learn. This one kind of rewarded you for doing a little bit of stuff, which is nice. So the different modes of play is you could learn your multiples, you could learn your factors, you could learn your primes, your equal and unequal things. And then there was a extra category where it was all the stuff, a smorgasbord. And they had difficulties from third grade math all the way up to eighth grade math and beyond.
Including advanced versions. They'd have third grade and third grade advanced.
Right.
Now, I will say, I don't know, did you play this on the app or the DOS?
I played the DOS version.
I played the DOS version as well. Yeah.
And the upper level of this is hard. I mean,
it is. That's where I started. I felt like an idiot.
Multiplications and fractions I was doing okay on. I don't know my prime numbers well enough to do this in the heat of muncher time. So I learned a little bit about myself today.
Wow, you learned you're not good at math?
No, I'm great at math. I'm just really bad at prime numbers, apparently.
Those are hard.
So if you just run around the grid, that would be kind of boring. So they added in these things called troggles. And all the troggles are bad guys that run around the screen and try to eat you. But they also do something else, too, because that would be kind of boring. So they have troggles that will just move in a path, and those are easy to avoid. They just kind of take up space. And then you have troggles that will go around the board and kind of follow you. Those are the hardest because they actually hone into your position. And to avoid those, every once in a while, a white square will appear on the grid, and that's your safe place. If you go there, none of the troggles can get to you. But you've also got troggles that mess with the board that will add additional answers, be them right or wrong. You have ones that will eat answers, which will take away your, you know, stop you from getting a better score. And all the while, if troggles run into each other, they eat themselves. One will eat the other. It's very high energy. It's very high paced. It pushes you to do math quickly, which is more the point than learning math. It's to practice math and learn it quickly. I had a ton of fun with this game. And I had a ton of fun with this when I played it as a child. I think I played this in sixth grade. So I don't even think I ever messed with the factors and stuff back then. I think I always did multiplication because that's what I was good at. And I remember competing with my classmates. They have a high score table, and you would compete for a high score. Now, would I go home after the fact and study to try to get better at the game? No.
What year did you say this came out? Did you say a year on this one? Because I was wondering myself as to when it came out, actually debuted.
Let me see if I can find that answer for you real quick.
Because I don't remember ever playing this in any level of school. And I will say while you're milling around there, when I played this, I played it at some point because I had vague memories of at least seeing it somewhere. And I will say, as far as math games go, this one is pretty fun. The fact of the matter is, you compete for score, which that right there, putting that in a classroom is a good idea.
Yeah.
Because kids want to be the best. They don't want to be the jerk at the bottom of the scoreboard. And this thing keeps the Hall of Fame when you put your name in it after you get your score, which is cool. The cutscenes were a stun.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it was a good little addition. It makes you want to keep going.
This game obviously could have been easily ported to really anything. It's not that difficult to port.
It was. It was ported to everything.
Oh, really? Because I found the DOS and the Apple II version, and I didn't see any other
versions. Yeah, well, later down the line, you can get this for cell phone even.
Oh, really? I could see setting the boy in front of this and letting him go to work. You know, it's funny, the kid now at school, they have these things called IXL classes that you do that are homework classes. They're homework assignments that you do on your computer at home.
Sure.
You know, and they're not nearly this fun. I just put it that way. I thought to myself, this would be a great idea to, and like you said, I thought, screw this, I was a two-time math field day winner at my school. I was all math all night long, baby. I've let those skills decline a bit.
Yeah.
And so I fired this up on the highest level, and I was doing it, but I mean, you're not going to be going through this rampant pace. I mean, you had to sit there doing math in your head, and I was like, man, this is heady stuff. So, I mean, it's no joke when you get in this higher level. It's tough.
Sure.
You know?
For the release date on this, the best I can find is 80s.
80s.
Which is where most of their games did come out.
I would guess that.
This game even has an Easter egg.
And really?
Yeah. I've never seen it. It's just something I read about it having. If you play the game on the 1st to the 25th of December, and now this is when your computer has to be on, have an internal clock that's always going, which wasn't something that was always the case
that's
back
true.
In the 80s.
I've got plenty of computers that don't have a clock in them.
But if you played it during the 1st to the 25th, all of the your Muncher character would wear a little Santa hat.
One of those. That's cute.
Excellent. Excellent little
I love that stuff.
Thing.
A
little
like,
extra.
I dug it. I mean, it was like I said, I had a good time playing it for what it was. It's very simple, but it works. That's the thing that makes an edutainment title fun.
Yes.
It had all the elements you like. It had a little like a Pac-Man element. It was something you could. That had a great adjustable, and the adjustments on the skill of makes work. They work. That worked out fine. It's got they use the game engine as it were to do all sorts of different teaching. That's good. It's got things to keep children interested and sort of. Enthralled in the whole setup with the cutscenes, and it's colorful. You know, it's not that colorful when you're playing it, but the cutscenes are nice.
Yep,
it's got
high score.
It's got a high score table, and it's something you could easily port over. I call this an educate. This is not too bad on the edutainment scale of pain during educating. I put this one relatively low.
I agree. The triangles can come out and get you sometimes when you least expect it. Or, of course, anytime you get a wrong answer, you also die.
Yeah.
Did we have any user reviews on this, Aaron?
We did, sir. Hey, listen, when you need a user review, our good buddy, Graham W. Vedke's there, my friend. And Graham writes, I will score this 6 out of 10 because it's probably better than doing times tables and other methods of learning maths. The gameplay isn't that thrilling. Move your number muncher through a grid of numbers, avoiding bad troggle guys and answering math questions at the top of the screen. You advance to the next level when you have selected all the correct answers. That's pretty much all there is to this. The longevity of this game boils down to your math ability or how well you want to get at maths. It was probably a well-loved MECC game in the day. So there you go. Six out of ten.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
I mean, I don't know what you... here's how I would... I don't do a formal score, but here's how I would look at a game like this. We looked at the checklist of what it does. You know, is it the most exciting game there ever was for education? No. But it's not bad. It makes you feel sort of like you're playing something. And that's what an edutainment title does. It's a trick. It tricks you into learning. It tricks you into thinking there's a game afoot when actually you're learning like a chump.
Yes. For me, I would rate this as something that... it's so easy to emulate. I would go out of my way to emulate it just to give it a try.
You can go to archive.org and play it as well.
Yes. Yeah. But certainly if someone else has it loaded up, take a whirl on it. Out in the realm of how much does this cost, holy cow, all over the map depending on what system you're buying it for.
Yeah.
Just randomly, I had pulled up for the Windows 95 platform in the original jeweled case. I guess it came in on a CD back in the 95 days. I guess I'm going to guess that had some...
That's weird because there weren't a ton of CDs.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that had some empty space on it.
Yeah.
$14.
$14. Yeah. And I think you could get it probably considerably cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you want the truth.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I thought it was okay as far as a edutainment title goes. So, moving along. My game comes with a conversation. So, I was over at the Boats Friday night, you know.
Stipulation time.
And Boat lamented. He's like, look at all these games I've got here. He said, and this was last week, and he said, look at all these games I've got here, and I feel bad because people have seen me these games, and I haven't been able to play them all. I'm like, listen, but you can only play what you got, you know, and he tries to play everything we've got. People send us games, we try to play them. So I thought, you know what, for this week's title, I'm going to take some of my own advice and pick a game that I actually own. And so with that in mind, I chose Donald Duck's Playground. You can see the box there, and look, lo and behold, here is the actual box.
Now, if you slightly watch, more yellow.
If you watch my Coco Massive Haul episode, you can see I got this in that haul. And you can see this opens up into a lovely thing. So let's talk about this Donald Duck's Playground, Brent. And by the way, it was this or Winnie the Pooh. That was the two edutainment titles that came in my...
Donald Duck's Playground is actually something I did play in my youth.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go. So Donald Duck's Playground... Now, a lot of versions of this came out in 84, but the Tandy color computer version of this came out in 86. So, you had Sierra Online behind this one. This came out for a ton of different platforms, including the Amiga, the Atari ST. Think about that stretch. The C64, yeah. the IBM PC. Think about this. The IBM PC Junior.
Yeah.
Got a version of this. Yeah. Apple II. You got a bunch of crazy versions. And this was the Coco version I looked at this week. Now, I'll tell you right out of the gate, when you open this Coco version of this game and look at the beautiful pictures, all the pictures in it are from the Tandy / IBM version.
Yes.
It's a rip. Wrong. Yeah. They tricked you. It doesn't look like that. It's one of those gimmicks.
Of course, if you knew your computer, you'd be like, no.
Well, yeah, what makes it worse for the Coco is it says Tandy / IBM, which meant the Tandy 1000 series.
Yeah.
And even on the
front, it was a complete screw job.
Even on the front of this, it says Tandy Color Computer. It doesn't actually say, it says Tandy Color Computer, but Tandy's in huge letters.
Yeah.
So, very confusing. So, what is Donald Duck's Playground, Brent? Well, what it is, you take the role of the classic cartoon icon, Donald Duck, and your job is to go around earning money so he can buy playground equipment.
Simple.
This is exactly the way they do it in the education system here in West Virginia. Everyone's going out, they do the menial jobs for pennies, all to get those kids a slicky slide. Now, before we get too deep in this, I want to talk, because you know how I am, I want to talk a little bit about Donald Duck, the character, the second fiddle to Mickey, as it were. Donald, believe it or not, Brent, first appeared in a cartoon in 1934. Pretty
okay, I can believe that.
That's a long time ago. Here's some stuff I didn't know about him. His full name, Donald Fauntleroy Duck. It's Fauntleroy. And he's got aliases. According to Wiki, his alias is the Maui Mallard, Frank Duck, Fred, the Duck Avenger, Paper Ricknick, Super Duck, Double Duck as well. He's got a lot of crazy, a lot of crazy nicknames. And of course, there's a whole slew of Donald Duck relatives, Daisy, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, like Scrooge McDuck, all
yeah,
those guys.
Yeah, whole family, whole Duckburg.
I looked over his appearances in video games, and Donald Duck truly is an underappreciated video game character who's appeared in at least 40 video games.
Yeah.
40!
Yeah.
That's incredible. And so, and I would
when you can't pay for Mickey, you get Donald.
Well, Mickey's in this game.
Well, sort of.
He's involved. He's involved. So, Donald's put to work in this game. And this game is a series of mini games that lead up to buying, I guess, this equipment you need.
A playground for your kids.
Right. It seems simple, right? Well, it's not. It sort of is, I guess. So, there are four small games in this that you can go to. It starts off with like a city street. One side of the city is where you buy stuff, and one side of the city is where you get your job.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I'm going to go in the order that I.
It is definitely the company town of a video game.
So the way I did these, I went in an order that only that I would do because I didn't know where I was going. I just staggered around the map like Donald had just came out of the bar, and the first place I ended up going was the train station to play the train mini game. Now, in this game, you are confronted with sort of a train map in front of you, and you are tasked with moving the switches on the train track to get Donald to get the train to go where it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
Right. And so at the bottom of the screen, there's like six switches, and you just walk up to them, hit the button, and once you hit the button on the switch, you're basically locked into that switch. And you move your joystick left and right to move the switch left and right. And when you're done, you hit the button, you can move to the next switch. So it's one of those. In the meantime, the train just toots around the track at the top of the screen. It never really stops.
It only stops when it gets to a predetermined destination.
In Duckland, you better jump off the train. There's no stopping that sucker. That's the game. For each of these minigames, you set a time limit as to how long you want to play. So there's really no win or lose. You just go in there, and then however much money you earn is how much money you get.
Right.
So what did you think of the train mini game?
Okay.
We're going to go that way.
You know what? For right now, I'm just going to talk about the games themselves. And then I'm going to give an overview.
That's right. That's what I want.
The train game was kind of boring.
I thought it was a game. I mean, it was sort of like a game.
Yeah, it was. But it
now,
was,
what edutainment would you get from this?
None.
I'm sure there is some edutainment to be had here in terms of pain.
And
you were learning you were making logical decisions to make the shortest train track. This was sort of like a game.
This had no educational value at all. It had none.
You're being tough.
No educational value
at all.
I think it had decision-making training. There are six switches. And if you randomly hit the six switches, you are eventually going to get the correct outcome. Can you put some logic into it to get the train to go where you want? Of course. But it isn't like planning out a route. It's because no destination is more than, say, two switches away. So, no.
Luckily, I've got the trusty box here. Allow me, if I may.
All right.
Logical thinking, it says. Players direct the Amquack Special to make pickup and delivery stops at eight towns in Duck County. Your child must help Donald control the switches to guide the train to the correct destination. There you go. So that's logical thing. It's a logical thinking aspect of the game.
No. I understand that the target audience for this is like four.
Yeah.
And even as a four-year-old.
No, 7 to 11.
Oh, then no way.
Like my kids right in the ballpark of this game.
No way. No, this has no educational value for someone of that age.
So let's move on to the second mini game that I tried, which was the airplane luggage handling section. This is where Donald rolls over the airport there in Ducktown, and he is a luggage handler. And this makes this, I'm sure many luggage handlers actually use this game to ply their craft to get better at it, because this game Is that this is a tough one. This is sort of has an I Love Lucy quality. As the luggage careens out of a conveyor belt, and your job is to get the luggage, turn around, and drop it in the correct destination bin.
Not drop.
Or throw.
Not drop. Throw into a vehicle that appears to be at least 15 feet behind you.
Throw. Yeah, you're right. Donald violently throws your luggage into these vehicles. Now, this one, I played this again. I played this on the actual Coco, and I had some trouble learning how to. You have to line up your throws perfectly to get these things to go in the bins.
Yeah,
and
I
attribute
hard.
That to the fact that I was using a non-analog joystick, and I did get better at it after a spell. I found this event sort of annoying, just because of the annoyingness of having to get it in a proper bin, and also the fact that I wasn't very good at it. The luggage goes pretty quick, doesn't it, Brent?
Well, you don't have to get every piece of luggage. That's one thing you have to understand. And the luggage is denoted by its destination, so it has abbreviations for like Atlanta or JFK, different airports, and then the bins are also labeled the same. So you take the luggage and then you throw it into the appropriate bin.
Right.
This has very, very minute traces of edutainment, because you have to at least recognize the matching letters, because it can get confusing, because a lot of the letters are used, like maybe J is used in two different things, but JFK goes to one airport and like JPC goes to a different airport. So you have to be aware of that and make your decisions. Now, something that's very comical about this is you have your luggage thing pull up and you're throwing all your luggage in the different bins.
Yeah.
And then the luggage carrier goes up and loads all the bins onto one plane. And these aren't like, well, maybe the plane's making like multiple stops. No, because this is like East Coast and West Coast, and then back to the East Coast, and then the mid. So all these, you're basically sorting the luggage so it gets lost.
I think you're reading too much into this one. It's for kids, but yeah, that plane would be wacky. Now, according to the box here, this game helps you with your matching skill.
Yeah.
So
no,
I'll
agree
that.
With that.
I'll
I agree
that
with
one.
That one.
I'll buy that one.
Yeah.
So from there, after that game, well, it was time to go sort.
One thing.
Yes.
That is for the age stated on the box, 7 to 11, no. If we're looking at this as an age from a 7 to 11, no 7-year-old is going to gain any insight or knowledge or understanding of matching from that game. So it has an edutainment of 0.
I don't agree with you on that. I think there's edutainment to be had. Listen, what is edutainment? It's something pretending to be entertainment that's educational and painful.
But this
is the embodiment of education.
No. You learn nothing. You learn nothing. Not that's as it. A 7-year-old. As a 4-year-old, maybe. As a 7-year-old, no.
Listen, I learned
next
plenty.
Game.
I learned plenty about
next
luggage sorting. So what are you? Where do you can't just order me to the next game. I go when I want to go. So now we're going to the next game.
That's right.
So the next game I went after was the fruit matching game. Now this is another game. It's funny, Donald does a lot of these menial tasks. This is another one here. Donald is actually behind a truck that's throwing fruit out. You've got to catch them. I mean, they just violently throw the fruit.
Yes.
And you've got to catch them.
It looks like all the luggage handlers that you replaced went to the produce industry and just got another job.
You've
got to
grab this fruit and put it in the correct bin. And underneath the bin, there's like a conveyor belt. When you screw up, the fruit gets smashed and it gets taken away. So you've got two things you got to do here. This is edutainment at its purest form right here. Step one, you have to catch the fruit, which... No one signed me up for that. That's not educational. And then you got to put the fruit in the correct bin. This is actually super duper simple. You have to be an idiot not to be able to put this. Even the dumbest kid can figure this one out. You put the fruit in the thing. So, and we should mention that when you do these jobs, you earn money, and which we'll get into why you earn money later. So once you've done your job there at the fruit stand, then it's time to go to the toy store for the most difficult of the...
Wait a minute. I want to put in my 2 cents.
Oh, please. Chime in on the fruit store.
Garbage game. Garbage. The produce, garbage.
Well, I thought there it was fun to catch the produce.
No, there is no... Again, no one... Because there's only 3 symbols, and they're different in both shape and size. So it's not like someone's going to be like, man, I don't know how to match things. So there's no edutainment value at all on this. At all. basically, this is just a meaningless task.
Well, so, you educate your student or son or whatever in the value of fruit.
No.
The ability of a duck to catch fruit.
No.
You know,
no.
And what happens when you put fruit in a raw box? It gets mushed and taken away. Horrible.
Moving on.
So, lastly, on the minigame dock, as I mentioned, was the stocking at the toy store. This seemed like it'd be great, but this is the game that I sucked at the most. I had all kinds of control issues with moving that ladder around. You've got a building with a ladder that goes up. This is a horrible way to store toys. a toy will appear on this little area. You go get the toy. And then
it's
a
stock. Yeah.
You got to move the ladder to where the toy where the twin of the toy is, and you've got to the left of that. Then you got to go up the ladder with the toy and drop the toy in the same area as the other toy. Well, I smashed most of my toys. Because when you screw up, the toys just careen to the ground and just explode.
Yeah.
As an added bonus, the toy store happens to be located beside Amquack, the train. And so every so often, there's a timer at the bottom of the screen. And every so often, when that Amquack train rolls by, you've got to shut the shutter in front of the shelf of toys. Otherwise, the toys fall off and shatter. This is a horrible game for kids. Yes. And this, I was wrong. This is the purest form of edutainment here.
This one was brutal.
When you think edutainment, this is the one I think of. Just it punishes you over and over. And then there's a massive punishment waiting in the wings.
Because the first time you see the timer counting down, because the button or lever to close the thing is off to one side that you don't pay any attention to if you don't know what's going on.
Did you not see the timer?
Timer. But when I first loaded it up, because it's been forever since I played this, I was like, first of all, problem number one, you can only load the shelf to your left.
Yeah.
So if the toy you want to do is on your right, you can't. You have to move the ladder. And then, so the very first thing I did was I grabbed the toy, I went up, and it was on the toy I needed to load was on the right. And I hit the button, and he just dropped it on the ground. I was like, what? Yeah. I was like, okay.
I'll
go back over, I grab another toy. And this one was lined up. It was already properly lined up. So I went and I put it on the shelf. I was like, okay. And then the third toy, I had to move the ladder. And I didn't know I knew the ladder could move, but I didn't know how to move the ladder.
Yeah.
So where I was trying to figure out how to move
it. Did you have trouble moving it?
Yeah.
I did too.
Even on the DOS version. So even as I was trying to move the ladder, the train came by, and I thought it was just an earthquake.
Nothing.
I thought this toy store was just on the fault line.
Yeah.
And continuously got hit by quakes. All the toys fell and broke. I was like, what am I doing? I would just leave.
Can you imagine you're a little kid playing this? All the toys break and you've destroyed the toy store. That would probably, that might scar you.
That would ruin you, yes, as a
Listen,
child.
What hosed you was you didn't have the actual copy to look up what was going on with the manual and stuff in here. Thank God for having this thing around. This is why you do the ones you own.
And this was not an edutainment game. This was only Kane.
This was like I said, this is the purest form of edutainment. So, those are your four mini games. Now, there's an extra sort of secondary thing which we'll get to. So, what are you doing all this for? It's because you got to have a job. By the way, this teaches economics in a way.
It does teach economics.
It also teaches you what minimum wage is because you literally earn pennies for these jobs. I mean, they're screwing Donald Duck. This is hard work. That thing going up down that ladder, you're taking a beat and you're making pennies.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, they count out your money to you, and they count it out in like dollars and pennies and quarters and nickels. So you can see why they did it that way. But as an adult, I was appalled by this. And any kid now would realize, they're like, wait a minute, I earned a buck for doing that? What the heck? I worked that freaking job at the railroad for 6 minutes. I earned a dollar. I'm like, are you kidding me? What is going on here?
Yeah, that's something worth mentioning is if you step back at it and you'd be like, man, I earned like $40 or like $4 for like 6 minutes worth of work. That's pretty good. But in Duckburg, man, that means nothing.
Yeah, and also time.
That gets you a tire.
Time works different for ducks.
Yeah.
Trust me. You know what a day's work is in Duckville or whatever because you're working hard. Oh, wait, calling this Donald Duck's Playground, I see why they did it, but this is not play.
No.
This is teaching a kid go out and be productive.
Yeah, this
Or be a horrible luggage handler. It teaches them something. By the way, I should mention that the toy game, I don't know. I guess that's a matching. That's what the box says, but I'm not that one sucked.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a game, don't make it so hard for the kid. I didn't like that one.
Let me tell you, that's the first game where a 7-year-old would be like, "Man, this is somewhat of a challenge."
Well, yeah, because the 30-year-old me,
Okay. Oh, we go back 37,
in time. 37-year-old me also thought this was a challenge. So anyway, once you've done all this, you've amassed a lot of duck cash.
No, you haven't. Right? You've amassed some.
I amassed, I believe at the end of my, when I got had enough, I amassed like about $1.74.
Oh, God.
When duck money, that's $1,000. Then it's time to go to the stores. You got stores at on the side of town here. You've got a junk store. There's like a nickel and dime store. A couple of stores in there. And they're all manned by Disney characters. You got the Minnie Mouse. You got Mickey.
And Goofy.
You got Goofy over there, right? Man,
of course, they put Goofy in the junk shop.
Yeah, Goofy.
He can't have anything decent.
Goofy, once again, relegated to the loser role. And so what you're doing is you're buying components to build a playground on the other side of the tracks at the edge of town. Everything in this town revolves around the railroad. And so once you buy this stuff, it sort of goes into this inventory of playground stuff. Now, I will tell you, I never bought all the stuff I needed to get the playground going. I had enough after a couple hours of this. And I know you probably, did you complete a playground of any sort? Because at the end, there's like a sort of boxes with all the playground stuff that you sort of have to rotate around to make the playground stuff fit together.
Well, I did not complete this during this week.
Yeah.
I have completed this in the past.
Okay.
And
was it worth it?
Well, this is what I want to talk about with this game. Depending on what version you play, and in my opinion, the Coco version is probably the worst. It pays the least amount of money per job and has the worst graphics.
No sense.
Probably if you're going to play this, play it on the Amiga. The Amiga version is really good. And here's something you'll learn very early on.
Yeah.
Don't go into farming. Don't go into toys. Don't work for the railroad. You go up there and you work your butt off as a luggage handler and you make sweet bank.
Yeah.
Because
that's a government job. That's
you
why.
Can, that's right. You can make so much more money per time invested at the airport than any other thing.
It's funny because I made most of my money working the train.
No.
That's where I made the big money.
No. Because
I thought it was just easier to do the train. That's why I guess just played that one more.
The train has too much downtime for what money it receives back. Now, there are some versions of this game where every time you do the train yard, I think the DOS version is actually the worst for money. I think for the DOS version, every time you complete a lap for the train, you get a dime.
Yeah,
that's two destinations for a dime.
You know, you reminded me of something too.
In the Amiga version, you get 75 cents.
One thing we failed to mention, and this is another edutainment part of the game, edutainment, is that you also when you buy stuff, you have to give them exact change.
That is 100% the best edutainment of the game.
Yeah,
is dealing with money.
Yeah, you have to
manage money.
If you buy and the stuff you buy, thankfully the stuff is very expensive. Thank God, you don't have money.
Well, I think you still need like $70 or something to buy everything.
Yeah,
because lot of stuff.
Yeah, but you have to when you buy this stuff, you have to go through your things and give them the exact amount of money you need. That's pretty good.
If you don't have the exact amount of money, you have to get you have to count your own change out too. But I like that aspect of the game is the best.
Yeah.
But, like I said, depending on your version is how much you get paid. It is how the speed that you walk and stuff is different depending on the versions. And the Coco version is kind of in the middle. The DOS version is painfully slow walking around town.
Let me ask you a question. All right. If you want to cover this, you got Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And I read somewhere that when you cross the tracks, you will become Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Is that after the playground's built?
Yeah,
that didn't happen on this version.
Here's something you have to understand. When it says build the playground, you actually get a play in the playground.
I read that.
And that means like if you put up a tire swing, you can go over to the tire swing and interact with it as one of the kids, and he'll swing in the tire for a little bit and then
good.
Get off. Yeah. It is so rewarding. It is so rewarding. I remember, and I don't have a great memory of it.
See, I gave up too early. I didn't get to experience
it. I have some memory of buying the little hobble horse and just playing on it over and over because he does that thing where he swings real far back and and back and forward. It's because what's with the spring hobble horses?
You found this real rewarding, did you?
And I just did it over that and seems, over as a kid.
To me, that strikes me as incredibly sad.
Oh, this is what you, no, as a kid.
You went to a virtual playground with a virtual guy and then you enjoyed yourself with a hobby horse.
It was because I knew I had fun playing on that piece of equipment, and I was allowing someone else to have fun, so it made me feel good.
I see. And how old were you at this?
Oh,
27?
I was, gosh, when I played this, I had to have been preteen, for sure. So, here's the thing. Let me back up all this. The mini games of this game suck. You learn nothing.
It's a variable.
It is variable. It goes from sucking to blow.
No.
The money aspect of this game is brilliant because you want to earn more money,
if not painful,
to get all the toys to play with all the different types of toys. That the cheese in this is absolutely perfect. That makes you want to keep playing it, and learning about money and managing money and, you know, buying what you need to get something up and running. Brilliant. All that is brilliant. But this is the most cane. This puts the cane in edutainment.
Yeah, it turned out this is the perfect title for this.
Because this is meaning. This is so meaningless jobs making so little money that it beats you down to get to that place.
This is a good. This is a good primer for real life.
It is. I felt just as beat down then as I do now.
We had one user review again from our buddy Graham. He writes. I've seen this game before on MS-DOS, but I will score the Coco version 7 out of 10. It's essentially a series of mini-games where you send Donald to work in various scenarios, such as a train controller, an airport conveyor worker, a fruit market packer, etc. And you earn a wage at the end of each level. It can get a little repetitive, but it does teach sorting patterns and introduces logic problems. My youngest daughter wants to play this more. But mostly because you can buy parts for a playground and build it. Oh, we've got a second review. Just came in.
Oh, all right.
From our buddy Rushi. And by the way, this guy is an expert in edutainment. He was waxing on these games earlier this week on our Discord. So I was hoping Rushi would get one in. So
thank you, by the way, Graham.
So
I'm glad your kids love it. And that's the pull that makes them want to play it more is exactly the pull that made me want to play it more when I was a kid.
There you go. So Rushi writes, a darkly realistic simulator of working menial jobs for pennies in order to buy frivolous experiences. The mini games are a mixed bag, with the railroad being the most enjoyable. That's what I thought.
It is the most enjoyable.
And both the grocery store and toy store making me question just how much I want that multi-tiered rocket ship slide. The rocking horse is my favorite because of its simplicity and impracticability. There's nothing to it, and I love it. A great tool for teaching children how to manage their money, though I credit this game for helping me learn how to optimally hoard worthless trinkets. There you go. So there's good two fine looks at this game. So I think those were two good titles. Actually, I don't think yours was too edutainmental because it wasn't too painful.
That's true.
I think Donald Duck's Playground
was a beat down.
It
allows you to have the soul crushing reality of life at a very young age. Although I would say this is still worth going out and emulating. Get an emulator. Play it on the Amiga. It's a much, much, much better version.
Let your kids play it. And if you do that, or you drop us a note, or comment on our video, whatever. So,
because they'll play it. And as soon as you show them that they can buy stuff with the virtual money they get, they're going to be playing it, and you can actually watch their little souls crush on their face.
Oh my God. Listen to me. You know what's not soul crushing?
What's that?
It's spinning the wheel, brother.
All right.
Spin that sucker.
Aaron, do you remember what we added this week?
We added, I believe, the Acorn Archimedes.
We did.
Got put in the mix.
And a new category called ARG Battle. ARG Battles is where Aaron and I will debate a topic and let the fans decide who's viewpoint was the more successfully debated.
He's dying to get that one. By the way, that was suggested by, if you say, Pac Billy.
That was a Pac Billy series.
Pac Billy's full of these good suggestions. All right, fire this thing up. You can feel the breeze going off of that.
That was a good old spin. Look at that thing go.
Yeah, that was maybe your best ever spin.
My gosh.
The Commodore 16.
It's finally happened.
It's funny, this thing keeps coming up. The Commodore 16. Look, Christmas time is still here. Well, it makes sense because we do, in fact, have our Christmas stuff still up. So, what do you know about the Commodore 16, Brenny?
I know I love Commodore, so I'm really looking forward to getting into the Commodore 16.
Okay.
I have not explored it as an actual system, though.
It's funny, I was watching a lot of reviews on the new Commodore, the C64 full-on computer that got released.
Yes.
The HDMI hookups, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And it comes with a standard built-in VIC-20 emulation as well,
yeah,
which is nice. But I'd heard someone mention that people had lamented that they wished that there would have been Commodore 16 support in this thing as well. And I was like, oh, okay, well, there you go. I don't know anything at all about the Commodore 16. Just I know it by name, and I know there were... I always heard that people that programmed for it were quite good because it was,
yeah,
not the easiest thing to fit games on. So.
Right.
And I assume the 16 is 16K. I assume that's
what that stands for.
So. That should be fun. Anything going on in the chat room today? You want to talk to anybody?
We had a few good chatters.
Most of them were garbage. Don't you saying?
there seems to be some appeal for the C16 category. I know a lot of people have been just clamoring for it.
Really?
Oh yes.
You're kidding me?
No. There's been a couple people every week rooting for it when the wheel is spun. A few people commenting about how soul crushing the Playground game actually is,
yeah,
and how much it teaches real life in the most painful ways.
Yeah,
and just a general good time being had in chat, which we're all, you know, you always love to see.
Yeah, yeah. So let's take care of some business. We are currently in the process of shifting everything over to Anchor.fm, so we'll announce,
yes,
that later on down the line. You can always check us out with any of your podcatchers if you're watching this on YouTube. This is a podcast that goes out, and you can pick us up anywhere.
Then you don't have to look at us.
Yeah. See that right there. Also, edutainment. We may have something to tell you don't know, but you have to watch us say it. We will be back same bat time, bat chat. Can you think of anything else we need to say before we sign this sucker down?
We're coming up on ARG Presents 100.
Yeah. I probably should have mentioned this. I believe this is 98.
Yep.
My gosh. So we got, really, it's in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Well, we'll figure out something. We're doing something so epic that even we don't know what it is. It's going to be awesome, though. So, yes, thanks for sticking around with us through this many episodes. The ups and downs, we're still getting better, a little bit better audio-wise and video-wise. We're doing our best. That's all you can say. So, that's bad. I want to thank Duncan Styles for the awesome Tron-like opening gimmick.
Absolutely.
You know, love it. We also want to thank our good buddy, The Bark Bit, him of the awesome beard.
Yeah, that. Man. Oh, yeah.
He humbled me when I saw that. Saw his Secret Santa
video.
Like, oh. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, your beard's no good anyway. So, yeah, Bark Bit, he's the man. He provides our closing tune, which we love that. So, I think that pretty much dots the I's and crosses the T for this edutainment episode. I enjoyed that in a weird way. I don't know why. So, we will see you guys again next week, same bat time, bat channel. And until then, class dismissed.